Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So what text is on the board here?
21.
Mm-hmm. Yo yo mai pare dharma.
Yo yo mai pare dharma.
Kalpyate nishvalayache.
Kalpyate nishvalayache.
Tadayaso nirartasya.
Tadayaso nirartasya.
Vayader eva satama. Yaya, whatever, mai, unto me,
Hare,
the supreme,
Dharma,
is religion,
Kalpyate,
tends,
Nishvalaya,
toward becoming free,
from the result of material work.
Chet,
if,
tat,
of that,
ayasa, the endeavor,
nirartha,
futile,
syat,
may be,
payaade,
of fear, and so on,
eva,
as,
sattama,
O best of saintly persons. Translation, O Uddhava, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activities offered to me without personal motivation, even if they are externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. Purport. Even the most insignificant activity, when offered to the Supreme Lord without personal desire, can elevate one to the perfection of spiritual life. Actually, Lord Krishna always protects and maintains his devotee. But if a devotee actually cries to the Lord for protection or maintenance, desiring to continue his devotional service unimpeded, Lord Krishna accepts such apparently unnecessary appeals to be the highest religious process. Next verse, 22. Esha buti matam buddhir manisha cha manishinam yat satyam anriteneha martinapnotimam ritam. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever, for by following it one can, in this very life, make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. Purport. As described in this chapter, one who desires personal prestige in the Lord's service cannot be considered intelligent and clever. Similarly, one who is anxious to become a sophisticated transcendental philosopher is not the most intelligent, nor is one who is expert in accumulating money. The Lord here states that the most intelligent and clever person is the devotee who offers his temporary illusory material body and possessions to him with love and without personal motivation. The devotee thus obtains the eternal absolute truth. In other words, real intelligence is to actually surrender to the Lord without personal desire or duplicity. That is the Lord's opinion. Text 23. Esha te bihita krishno brahmavadasya sangraha shamasa vyasa vidina devanama pidurgama. Thus have I related to you, both in brief and in detail, a complete survey of the science of the absolute truth. Even for the demigods, this science is very difficult to comprehend. Purport, the word devanam indicates those living beings in the mode of goodness, such as demigods, saints, and pious philosophers, who nevertheless cannot understand the absolute truth because they lack full surrender to the personality of Godhead. Just read the verses again. O Uddhava, greatest of saints, in a dangerous situation, an ordinary person cries, becomes fearful and laments, although such useless emotions do not change the situation. But activity offered to me without personal motivation, even if they're externally useless, amount to the actual process of religion. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever, for by following it one can, in this very life, make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. Thus I have related to you both in brief and in detail a complete survey of the science of the absolute truth. Even for the demigods, this science is very difficult to comprehend. So this is the science of Bhakti Yoga that Lord Krishna is describing here. Crying out for the personality of God. So, one cannot attain Krishna by material means. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadantaram. The Supreme Lord as He is can be known only by devotional service, and when one is fully conscious of the Lord by such devotion, then he can enter into the kingdom of God. So it is only by the process of bhakti yoga, by devotional service, that one can attract Krishna. Krishna is very difficult to attain, but Krishna becomes indebted to the devotee, to the love of his devotee, and he is more interested in, far more interested in the love of his devotee than the particular things that are offered to him. The love is the primary thing. In the pastimes of Lord Krishna, there is a story of how Vidura once invited him to his home, and Vidura and his wife were so excited. They want to offer bananas to the Lord. They were so excited, they were peeling the bananas and offering the skins and throwing the inner part away. But Lord was accepting because he was very pleased with their devotion. The story of Damodar also illustrates how Krishna cannot be captured by material means, but can be captured by bhakti. Madhya Yashoda was trying to tie Krishna up to the grinding mortar in order to... He was just trying to tie him up prevent him from going to the neighbor's houses and stealing butter and yogurt, etc. Tie him up, I don't know to what. But anyway, she wanted to tie him up, but the rope was 2 inches too short, so she added some more rope, and it still, by Krishna's mystic potency, was 2 inches too short. Again and again she was adding rope, couldn't tie him up. Finally, Krishna, seeing the labor of his mother, she was perspiring, and seeing her love for him, that she wanted to tie him up because, as a mother, she wanted to train her child to be a good boy, to behave himself, to not embarrass her in front of the neighbors. Isn't it? Ladies are very conscious like that. Not to be embarrassed in front of the neighbors, that children should behave nicely and be, credit to the family. So, seeing that, motherly affection, Krishna allowed himself to be tied up. But the point is only by bhakti, it was because of her love and devotion. Otherwise, Krishna cannot be captured by any material means. He is more powerful than anyone, more intelligent than anyone, more cunning than anyone. As a child, Krishna exhibited this cunning. As young boys, they're often very cunning and sneak off to do naughty things, misbehave. They have a propensity to misbehave. So Krishna, he can be the most misbehaved. You go in the neighbors' houses and break the pots of yogurt and butter, feed them to the monkeys. The neighboring gopis, they would try by any means to avoid this. They would complain to Mother Yasoda, then they hide the butter and yogurt, even hang it from the ceiling, some hook, rope, hang the pots. But Krishna, Balaram would get on the shoulders of their friends and pull it down, smash the pots. Or if somehow if they couldn't get, then they would just pass urine on the floor in retaliation. So this kind of naughtiness and cunningness is very charming, of course. And when the culprit is caught, the mother is going to punish him. Then he begins crying, throwing a tantrum. This is common, isn't it, in the childhood of young boys. Remember myself also misbehaving. Some neighboring boy, he had written a letter. He could hardly write, very young, just starting to write. Written a nice letter to bring and give to me, maybe inviting me, I think, to his house. And I was in the garden with some other friends and puffed up, just tore the letter up. My mother happened to see it from the kitchen window. She came out, caught me, dragged me into the house. Lisa, I was bawling, crying like anything. I knew I would get, punished, some punishment. this is, common in the lives of young children, young boys especially. Always up to some mischief. So Krishna was most expert in that. In every department, Krishna is the most expert. So here, he is giving the best of all philosophies in this chapter. He is the supreme philosopher. And teaching us the process for attaining the supreme perfection of life, which is to attain pure love of Krishna and reside eternally in the association of the Lord, participating in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So in order to do that, one has to surrender to Krishna, to offer everything, his thoughts, his words, his deeds to Krishna. And well, this requires training, of course, good association, under the guidance of the bona fide acharyas, bona fide devotees who are absorbed in chanting the holy names and rendering devotional service, that we can progress in spiritual life. Just like a child needs to go to school and be trained in order to later function properly in the society. He may not like to do so. It may not be feel natural for him to go to school. Just like Prabhupada said, his mother had to get a man to tie him with a rope and take him to school. But we have to, the parents know that the children have to go, they have to be pressed to study, do their homework, so they pass their exams and in future they can be well educated and know how to function in society, be able to earn a livelihood, etc. So in the same way, it may not be so easy for a person in the beginning to practice Krishna consciousness. He may have the desire just like a child likes to play, so he may have the desire just to enjoy the senses in the material world. This is a common position of living entities in the material world, but those who are expert in Krishna consciousness, they know that someone has to teach others, to train others. I was listening to a lecture of Prabhupada, and this morning he was saying like that you know, people are very fallen in the material world. In fact, even the most fallen, he was saying, they're dog eaters. Prabhupada, recently I went to the Philippines and visit our center there, very nicely organized, he said. And actually, he said, Philippine people are dog eaters. Huh? There's some tradition, I don't know all, but there's some habit of dog eating. Korea also, he said. And he said, some Chinese also have that. In Vietnam also, in those countries that some habit of eating dogs. It's considered in Vedic culture, it's a very low svapacha. But he said, they're chanting Hare Krishna very nicely, better than some so-called Indian Vaishnavas, he said. He said, someone has to take the responsibility simply to teach them to practice Krishna consciousness, show the example and be very firm, just like Prabhupada himself was. Huh? He took the trouble to travel all over the world to teach people Krishna consciousness, and he was quite strict and heavy about it in many cases. Huh? He would call people, you know, some people, scientists or whoever, atheists, rascals, nonsense, using strong words to chastise them and insisting on, you know, following strict principles, four regular principles, chanting 16 rounds, rising early, kirtan, class. So he was insisting. Because in order to change one's consciousness, one has to have some training, just like that child. He has to go to school at whatever time, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, has to be there, attend the classes, and stay till the end, do homework, etc. So this kind of discipline is required in spiritual life. Disciple, the word comes from discipline. So in this way, that just as a child's consciousness is gradually transformed from just being a playful little rascal, you know, into becoming a, you know, serious student, and in future a responsible adult, So, in the same way, the wayward materialist, you can, by proper association, gradually be transformed into a bhakta, a sadhaka, and in due course of time, purified more and more to become an elevated devotee of the Lord. As Prabhupada said, the touchstone turns bell metal into gold. So in the same way, the association of pure devotees of the Lord can transform even the most fallen persons into great devotees, even those who are born in a so-called dog-eater family. They actually worse is a beef-eater family is even much worse, but they can be transformed into sincere, humble, pure Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. So this is a miracle of Krishna consciousness, but it requires some pressure, actually, some insistence. Prabhupada, he called this a pushing movement. We are pressing people, pushing them to take to Krishna consciousness. So, just like the book distributor, they're quite insistent people to take the books, read them. Or devotees are going to Harinam, making a loud noise in the street. Some people might not like it, cover their ears or whatever. But the devotees are, they don't care. Because they know these people, they don't understand what's for their real benefit. We have to give them Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada said, by hook or crook, they'll distribute these books. There was a famous cartoon, I think it was in the Punch magazine, of a devotee distributing books. And I showed a devotee with a pile of books, and he was distributing, and then some person, he had a book rammed down his throat. So, and we can't exactly ram it down people's throats. Still, there's some pressure there. Once a devotee complained to Prabhupada that, the Sankirtan leader is, pressing me to go out. And Prabhupada said, well, he's acting for your benefit. He's your well-wisher to save you from Maya. He's engaging you in devotional service. So in the beginning, that pressure is required, but as a person, learns the importance of Krishna consciousness and gains a taste for practicing Krishna consciousness, then the desire to serve and practice, it becomes more spontaneous, more natural, and you don't have to be, pressed so much anymore. Just like, then the child grows up, is it? In university, for example, it's expected at least that he'd be more, desirous of studying himself. And if we're given more free time, like university, it's not like classes from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, like in school. But, you may only have a few classes in a day. Expected to be more responsible and have the desire to study yourself. So in the same way, as a person progresses in Krishna consciousness, he should be more spontaneously enthusiastic to engage himself, and less interested in material sense gratification. So anyhow, these verses, they stress that the real essence of Krishna consciousness is that genuine desire to have Krishna's association, to call out for Krishna. It's like Prabhupada once gave translation of the Maha Mantra, oh, Krishna, O my Lord, please engage me in devotional service. Or he actually, George Harrison, Ravi Shankar came to see Srila Prabhupada, and I think it was George had written a song which was sung by Ravi Shankar's niece. I think it was his niece or his daughter or his niece. Krishna, where are you? Krishna, I am missing you. Krishna, where are you? And Prabhupada liked that very much. He said, yes, he said, this is the right mood, just like the Goswamis, you know. They were roaming in Vrindavan, hey Radhe, Braja Devi Ke Chalalita, hey Nanda Sutta Kuta. You know, where are you, O Radha? Where are you, Krishna? They were searching everywhere for Krishna. Or as the gopis, when Krishna left the Rasa dance, they were searching everywhere. Where is Krishna? Is it a, you know, love of Krishna in separation, calling out for Krishna, like a child calls to his mother. You know. This mood in chanting and devotional service. And that was also the mood of Lord Chaitanya. Vipralamba Bhav, intense and ecstatic love for Krishna in separation. So Krishna is especially attracted by that sincere cry of the devotee and makes himself available to such devotees. But then again, just like with the gopi, he may make himself available, then again he may disappear to increase that intensity of love. And the gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, they were always enacting the pastimes of Krishna, remembering his qualities. So in the same way, the devotees should listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam and hear the pastimes and instructions of Krishna, remember them, and in this way remain constantly in Krishna consciousness. Different devotees, of course, are expert in different kinds of activities. Some are good preachers, some are good in earning money and donating, or some are good in management. They're different qualities, and that's all good. They should be offered to Krishna. But it's not on the basis of one's wealth or intelligence that one can capture Krishna, but on the basis of one's purity of heart and devotion to the Lord. When Lord Krishna went to Mithila, he was invited by two of his devotees. One was the king of Mithila, Bahalashva, he's a very wealthy person, and the other was a poor brahmana called Shrutadev. So Lord loved both of them, and to please them both, he expanded himself into two. His associates also expanded themselves. Vyasadeva and others were with him. And you know, one party went to each place. So in the palace of the king, they were welcomed with great pomp and seated on opulent thrones, and puja was offered to them, and sumptuous feast, and there were musicians and dancers, and it was a very wonderful arrangement. And in the cottage of Shrutadev, they were offered simple straw mats on the floor, very humble foodstuff, you know, washed their feet, and just some humble meal of rice dal, chapati, sabji. Chutney maybe, I don't know. Anyhow, very simple. But Krishna was equally pleased in both places. He was pleased by the bhakti of his devotees. And of course we see many examples. Sudama was a very poor devotee, but Krishna was very pleased by his devotee, and he was also present in the Chaitanya Lila, so the Suplambar, Brahmachari, to beg from door to door. People would give little broken rice, and he would cook it, offer it to the Lord. Lord Chaitanya once came there just as he was offering, and he snatched it. Suplambar was saying, "It is not suitable for you, my Lord." Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, this is so delicious, most wonderful prasad I've tasted." So he was pleased that, even though he was very poor, Shukalavecha Sridhar, also very, very poor. His neighbors used to criticize him. But he's just, his family has hardly got sufficient clothing. His hut was leaking. Rain was coming through the roof. He fixed it, and the night he was simply chanting, "Krishna, Krishna. You're just crying, you know, uselessly," they said. "Why don't you work harder?" And of course, he was working hard, and he was selling banana leaves, bananas, banana root, banana stem. Banana cup, whatever, just to earn a living, and half of his income using for the worship of Mother Ganges. Lord Chaitanya was very pleased with him, very sincere devotee. And when Lord Chaitanya passed his hut, there was an old broken pot with some water just outside the door, and Lord Chaitanya was drinking it. Sridhar said, "You can't, and this is not for you, my Lord. Oh, this is just like nectar," Lord Chaitanya said. And then again, he had wealthy devotees like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, very opulent person. He came from East Bengal, Chittagong, there near to present-day Myanmar. Chittagong is southeastern Bengal. The Pundarik Dam is a ISKCON temple. It's a birthplace of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. If you have a chance to visit Bangladesh, it's one of the holy places. Very nice ashram. Anyhow, he is very wealthy, landowner. He had many lands there, and he also in Navadvip had a nice house on land. And inside his house, the furniture was very opulent. Velvet and silk cushions, beautiful vases. So, once Mukunda Datta brought Gadadhar Pandit there to meet Pundarik. And Gadadhar, in his mind, he was thinking, this person is a materialist. But then Mukunda Datta, he recited a verse from the Bhagavatam, and Pundarik heard it. He went into transcendental ecstasy. And he had long hair and opulent clothes, and he was rolling on the ground in ecstasy. His hair became scattered, his clothes became disarray, the vases were knocked over. And then Gadadhar Pandit realized this person has a real ecstatic love for Krishna, and he felt embarrassed that he had thought of him as a materialist, and he actually asked him for initiation. He was initiated. Gadadhar was initiated by Pundarik Vidyanidhi. When Lord Chaitanya first met Pundarik Vidyanidhi, they embraced for hours. They were locked in embrace. Lord Chaitanya was calling, "Bap, Bap, Father, Father," because he's incarnation of King Vrishabhanu. Jayapataka Maharaj called the deity, when he installed the deities in Pundarik, they called them Varshabhanabhi Murari. So the Varshabhanabhi is Radharani, the daughter of King Vrishabhanu. Murari he called, because, you know, Krishna kills the demons. He's the enemy of the Muradima, enemy of the demons. So any demonic elements would try to disturb the devotees, Krishna would protect them. There's also the Lord Chaitanya actually said that anyone who does not know who Pundarik Vidyanidhi is not a Vaishnava. And there's also a nice story how in Chaitanya Charitamrita how he was in Puri and he went on into the Jagannath temple on Odanashasti, which is the, I think it's the first day of winter, Odanashasti, I'm not exactly sure, but on that day Lord Jagannath is dressed in a new garments and new set of clothes. And Pundarik saw they were very stiff because the starch hadn't been washed out. So he thought, you know, why these pujaris are not, you know, washing out the starch so that the clothes are nice and soft for the Lord. Then at night he was sleeping and Jagannath and Baladev came in his dream and they started punching him in the face. Why you are, you know, disrespecting our pujaris? And when he woke up, his cheeks were all swollen. So he was he was a rich man, but you know, he was a very great devotee. Prataprudra Maharaj also was king. And although Lord Chaitanya initially refused to meet him, calling him like a worldly person, this was just in strict adherence to sannyas principles of not mixing with worldly persons. But eventually Lord Chaitanya did give him his mercy. That was because Lord Chaitanya was very pleased to see him sweeping the road in front of Lord Jagannath in a very humble way. He's also very pleased that he released Ramananda Roy from his position of governor in South India and gave him a pension so he could live in Puri and associate with the Lord. They could discuss Krishna Katha together. And he also made wonderful arrangements for all the devotees who came from Bengal, made sure they had nice accommodation, nice pudding, nice prasadam. So Lord Chaitanya was very pleased, and it was Sarvabhauma, I think, advised the king to put on ordinary dress. And then during Rathiyatra festival, there was a pause at one place, at Balagandhi, I think there's some gardens on the sides of the Grand Avenue. At that place, people come, they give offerings of foodstuffs to Lord Jagannath, and then the prasadam is distributed, and the devotees, you know, they take prasad in the gardens. So Lord Chaitanya also took prasad, and he was resting a little after, and then Sarbon told the king, you massage the Lord's feet and you recite some verses. So he was reciting from Srimad Bhagavatam, and Lord Chaitanya, he heard, and he said, he was very pleased. Go on speaking, he said. So he gave his mercy to the king. So that whether rich or poor, if a person has, you know, genuine bhakti, the Lord is attracted by that. Of course, if one is wealthy, you know, it is not that he should just offer very small things to the Lord. He has to serve the Lord in accordance with his position. Prabhupada, he mentions how sometimes the wealthy persons, they come to Vrindavan and just wearing loincloth, leaving all their money with their family. They come, here I am, Krishna. I have come to surrender unto you. Prabhupada said that Krishna asked them, where is your money? Why you did not bring some here for my service? So like Rupa Goswami, you know, he gave some of his wealth, accumulated wealth to his family, kept some for emergency, but he showed his that he gave 50% of his accumulated wealth for the service of the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, for the Krishna consciousness movement. So one should serve Krishna in accordance with his, you know, position and his assets, not be a miser. But if a person is genuinely poor, you know, let him anyway just offer leaf, fruit, flower, water. Krishna says, I will accept it. A very simple offering. So in this way, whatever we have, our body, mind, intelligence, and whatever possessions we have, we should offer those sincerely to Krishna with as much bhakti as possible. In this way we can hope to attract the mercy of Krishna and the blessings of the Lord and develop love for Krishna. So thank you. Any question here? Comment? Yeah.
I'll comment. I think Galayapar Khan is on that record as well with Ravi Shankar.
It could be. Yeah. Could be. Prabhupada actually, you know, he gave ideas to George Harrison. He gave him ideas, you know, from bhajan, from you know, themes that he could write on. And he asked Prabhupada, shall I give up everything and just, you know, join the temple? And Prabhupada said, no, you carry on with your music, I'll give you ideas. And that famous double album of his, what's it called? Living in the Material World? Those songs are, you know, inspired by Srila Prabhupada. Many nice Krishna conscious songs there. Beware of Maya, isn't it? That's one of them. Beware of darkness, beware of Maya.
I'm just trying to understand the relationship between the two sentences. The first part talks about dangerous situation and ordinary person cries and becomes fearful. And the second part actually talks about activities offered to the to me without personal motivation and so on, to the actual cost of religion.
Well, just making the point that you know, persons may cry in a dangerous situation, but it's kind of useless, you know, just crying and lamenting. So, you know, some activities may appear to be, you know, useless in the material world, but if they're sincerely offered to Krishna, then in other words, they don't seem to have any value. But if they're offered to the Lord, then the Lord accepts, you know. Even things without much value. So in the same way, if a person is very poor and just offers very simple things, so Krishna will accept those things. It's the principle of offering them to Krishna that's important.
Just wondering about this personal motivation. We not, you know, doing something for personal motives, and we doing it for Krishna. Is there a way to check, you know, if we're doing some activity or some devotional service? And yeah, how can we
Well, the way to get rid of personal motivation is by engaging in the service of the Lord. And normally in the beginning, persons do have personal motivation. That's why Krishna says, Chatur vidha bhajanti mam jana sutkritina arjuna artha jigyasu artha digyani chab bharatarsabha. Four kinds of pious persons approach me. Huh? One who is distressed, one who is in need of money, one who is inquisitive, one who is... They have personal motivation. But because they're going to Krishna, gradually that personal motivation becomes purified. And we find akama sarva kama vamoksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogina but yajetapur sampram. Whether a person is free of material desires or full of material desires or desires liberation, in any case, one who's got broader intelligence should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, it's recognized that, you know, generally in the material world people do have motivation, personal motivation. But if they engage that in Lord's service, then gradually they may become free. And also Kapila Dev describes different categories of devotee in the third canto. Devotees influenced by ignorance, maybe proud, angry, envious, whatever, separatist mentality, or devotees influenced by passion, maybe you try to use devotional service to get wealthy or famous. There's also separatist mentalities, strong personal motivation. Even persons who are influenced by goodness have some personal motivation, but their personal motivation is a better personal motivation. It's a motivation to become advanced in spiritual life. So that's a springboard from which they can become purified and attain pure devotional service, which is without personal motivation. It's just the motivation to execute the mission of the Lord, to serve the Lord. Well, how do we... And Kapil Dev says it's like the Ganges that flows to the ocean. Nothing can stop it, no material impediment. So how do we know if we have personal motivation? Well, I guess by reading the scriptures, by associating with determined and advanced devotees, and by practicing the process, chanting as attentively as possible. Krishna gives intelligence to be able to understand one's own motives, consciousness. Other devotees can also help. We consult experienced devotees that can help us to understand. But I don't think it's something we need to get too kind of obsessed with. Just try to be absorbed in following the process of bhakti yoga and engaging in some kind of practical service which is authorized and acceptable. Service to the Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada said that service to Krishna in this age of Kali means to serve the Sankirtan movement. So just try to do something practical and at the same time follow the principles and the sadhana process. Any comment on this point? Right, yeah. Yeah. Keep positive, you know, Krishna will help, you know. It's a gradual process. So, yeah. speak of a bit.
From the lowest planet to the highest planet, all planets are invisible. So in this planet where we live, we can see the sun as we do. We can understand from each other that the lower planets are also quite livable conditions. But it's generally like life, most of the things are really bad, you know, life itself seems very wonderful. So how is there misery in the heavenly planets?
Well, eventually there's death. And also the good karma can run out and the person falls down. There's a story about one sage in the Mahabharata, I can't remember his name, but he was a young sage who lived in the forest, and Durvasa Muni, you used to visit him with many disciples, you know, unexpectedly, like he did in other cases with the Pandavas or Ambarishmaras, like that. He did it several times with this sage, you know, just to test him. But somehow that sage always managed to gather enough roots and fruits and berries and things to feed Durvasa and his followers. So Durvasa is very pleased, and he gave him a benediction: you can go to the heavenly planets. So a chariot came to take him to the heavenly planets, and the charioteer said, please get in, let's go. And he said, well, first, you know, please tell me something about the heavenly planets. What are the advantages and disadvantages of life in the heavenly planets? So then the charioteer related to him some of the, you know, wonderful heavenly delights that are there. So then he said, well, you know, what are the disadvantages? So he said, well, eventually, he said, one's good karma runs out. And as that time grows closer, a person starts to feel more and more anxiety. And eventually time comes, his good karma is finished, he has to fall down again. And that is a most horrible experience, he said. It's a devastating experience. And that sage said, well, he said, then in that case, I won't go there. I'll stay here and, you know, keep practicing sadhana, austerities, devotional service. If Krishna wants to take me to the spiritual world, he can. Just let me be engaged in the devotional service. So, for many, that may not seem important, that, you know, there'll be an end to it. But that is the misery, you know, there is birth and death there also. One is not free from it. Of course, sometimes the demons attack also, isn't it? The demigods on occasion have been defeated as well. And then there was a lot of lamentation. Aditi, for example, was lamenting like anything when her sons, the demigods, were defeated. The fortunate thing, of course, is that they're devotees. Prabhupada says, there's a purport in the sixth canto. He says that demigods have material attachments. And because of that, they get a kind of reaction in the form of harassment from demons. But when they're harassed, they take shelter of the Lord. They appeal to the Lord for protection, and the Lord gives them protection because they're devotees. So there is some harassment there from demons, some, you know, inconveniences also in the heavenly planets. Sometimes some misunderstandings are there, some pride is there. Just, you know, Indra, he got a bit puffed up. The spiritual master Brihaspati came. You know, he was sitting with his wife enjoying, he didn't really respect him. Because of that, they got some bad reaction, isn't it? And the demons were attentively worshipping their guru, Sukracharya. They became more powerful. They were able to defeat the demigods. So it may be very wonderful, but still, you know, just like even this planet, there may be persons very wealthy that have, you know, beautiful houses, and, but, you know, it may come to an end. You know, sooner or later, just like this Tunisian president. He had so much wealth and beautiful villas, and now he's been driven out, lost everything. So this can happen on this planet, can happen on the heavenly planets also, due to some apparatus or for whatever reason. Yeah. Well, so far I understand there is some influence, but it's much, much, much less than in the heavenly planets. I mean, the situation there is obviously much more sattvic all the time, but still, even in Kali Yuga, there would be a certain influence. And the hellish planets, you know, the influence of Satya Yuga would be a lot less. There's a perpetual kind of Kali Yuga type situation there. But still, it would be a little bit better, Satya Yuga. Anyone have any comment on that point? Yep. Yes. Yes, that was mentioned also in the purport. The word Devanam indicates those living beings in the mode of goodness, such as demigods, saints, and pious philosophers, who nevertheless cannot understand the absolute truth because they lack full surrender to the personality of God. They become conditioned to the mode of goodness. And that's also one of the snares of Maya, of the material world. Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Prema Namini.